So, jetzt haben wir noch jemanden aus Finnland. Die Kollegin Anu Palmu war ehemalige Leiterin der Rechtsabteilung bei Nokia. Sie wird uns darüber berichten, wie aus dem eigentlich seriösen und tollen Unternehmen Nokia dann durch die Too Big to Fail-Strategie eine kriminelle Vereinigung geworden ist. Sie wird uns außerdem darüber berichten können, nicht nur Finnland, sondern auch Griechenland, und darüber berichten können, wie damals, als Nokia zum größten Handyhersteller wurde, die amerikanischen Dienste sich große Mühe darum gegeben haben, mit Erfolg die Entschlüsselung zu bekommen, damit man jederzeit, und dann natürlich nicht nur bei Nokia, sondern auch bei den nachfolgenden Unternehmen, damit man jederzeit mithören kann. Anu, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely.
Very good. I apologize because I live up here in the mountains in a small village, and the line, the GSM line is not so strong often that I can't put the video on. So I will be the mystery face to you guys. Okay, I know that you have had a long, heavy day, so I think we will speak shortly. And please, Rainer, ask me questions which you think that your colleagues would like to hear from me.
Oh yeah. Let's start out with your background. Tell us a little bit. I mean, you and I know what we're talking about. We've spoken already, but our viewers don't know much about you yet, except for the very short introduction I just gave.
Yes. Okay, so I was the first lawyer in Nokia mobile phones when I joined the company in 1988. And at that point of time, of course, the mobile phone division was very small, although the analogical mobile phone business was quite widely already covering this globe. But of course, the GSM technology changed the world completely. So I have a very interesting and a privileged background, so that I've been in a very interesting position in a company which has grown enormously in a very short time and become so-called global company. And as you remember, Nokia was the number one for years, and I've seen in a way the way that global companies operate, and also how that differs from the smaller ones. And the position was very interesting because I was able to participate in everything that that kind of corporation does. And I have always been quite, in a way, an exceptional lawyer. I'm not a typical corporate counsel. I've been always interested in much wider questions, and mainly I've been very much interested in ethical questions relating to business and all this, how we deal with each other during the course of our lives, no matter what we do. And of course, that was then part of my way of looking things while I was in Nokia mobile phones. So with this background, and I think I told you about my very exciting moment in the Pentagon with the National Security Agency, where I was negotiating the encryption algorithm for the whole industry. So that sort of opened my eyes very much. And with that understanding, I can actually vision what is happening with these vaccines.
Okay, very interesting. Also Anu Palmu sagt, sie hat zu einem Zeitpunkt bei Nokia angefangen. Da war Nokia noch eine ganz kleine Firma, die oder eine kleine im Verhältnis jedenfalls Gesellschaft und deren Mobilfunksparte war damals erst am Entstehen. Irgendwann ist Nokia dann zur Nummer 1 geworden, aber sie sagt, sie sei keine wirklich typische Anwältin, sondern sie hat sich immer auch für das Leben und das menschliche Zusammenleben interessiert. Deswegen hat sie so ein bisschen auch mit Distanz beobachtet, wie aus diesem kleinen Unternehmen ein großes wurde. Und mit das Interessanteste dabei war ihr Besuch bei den Geheimdiensten in den USA, wo sie maßgeblich an dem Aushandeln an der Öffnung der Encryption Algorithms, also der Verschlüsselungsalgorithmen, beteiligt war, sodass offenbar dann die Geheimdienste in der Lage waren, und zwar für die ganze Industrie, nicht nur für Nokia, da war sie dabei, sodass dann am Ende die Dienste in der Lage waren, über diese Öffnung der Encryption Algorithms in die Telefone einzusteigen und mitzuhören. Is that correct, Anu, that you, when you negotiated the encryption algorithms with the, was it with the NSA or the...
Yes. With National Security Agency in Pentagon, Washington, D.C.
And that enabled, and that was done for the entire industry, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
That in theory and in practice as well, they can listen in on each and every one of our phone conversations.
Yes, definitely. That's been part of the GSM specification from the very beginning. And it's very interesting because when that GSM technology specification was defined, most of us first thought that this is purely a European kind of a project. But then actually, I found out, of course, because I was participating in that, that in fact it has in it a National Security Agency approved military encryption algorithm. So we have to understand that when the GSM specification has been adopted, 1990, somewhere around that, all the way from those days, every single mobile phone, digital mobile phone conversation has been recorded. And pardon me?
Is everything still available, every conversation from then?
Well, we should ask the National Security Agency. They actually, I think they must have most of that. So, but for instance, people are now, This relates to, for instance, the question of are they able to find Hillary Clinton's emails and phone registers and sort of things? Yes, without this digital information recording by NSA relating to mobile phones, they would not have this. So what I said to you, Rainer, was that we should never think that our phone calls are secret.
Yeah, but there's so many of them. I think it's going to take someone who's very well organized to kind of find
Definitely. And of course, it's always so that, well, let me say one thing, though. When that GSM specification was defined, there was a group called the GSM MOU, which was a group of all kinds of players who defined the specification together. And of course, it also involved armies and Europol and these sort of instances, together with the industry. So it's been actually a kind of a basis for all these kind of digital surveillance that we can see nowadays.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. So was everyone involved? Didn't anyone wonder why what this would be for? I mean, was the official explanation that this would be to identify like criminals or like mafia structures or something, or was everyone just okay with it, saying, "Oh, we're not going to listen in on anyone that we just feel inclined to do."
Well, dear, I think it always goes that there's a very good explanation why these kind of rights are applied. But I don't think that this kind of global digital communication tool would ever have been able to go through without these participants being involved. Because this is really, it was interesting because that encryption algorithm was actually a military product, and it was moved from the export control military product side to the double use products, i.e. one could install that in the mobile phone software. Mm-hmm.
But the idea was that it would be used by, so basically the American or like the Western ally military people or secret services or whatever would be able to use that. Or was this supposed to be open access for every kind of military operation from all around the world? Or just like, you know, exclusively?
The Five Eyes, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, I have to be honest with you. I never got that part of detailed information. And I think only few people received it. So, but when we think about this moment now, so we understand that that is the history, and now we live 2021. So we have had that kind of products now in the market, in our pockets, and in our backs now about 25, 30 years, right?
Yeah.
So this means that this kind of surveillance has been ongoing all the time from those days. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that it's very normal. And of course, police and other officials are utilizing that when they are trying to figure out if someone is doing crimes or whatever. Mm-hmm. But we all know that these are problematic because they can always be used for good, but unfortunately they can always be used for bad. But the dream of the digital mobile phone manufacturers was to have this kind of gadget in everyone's pocket or in the bag, right? Mm-hmm. And gradually the actual product in a way lost the meaning because the more important thing became all the services around the use of such a product. So, as everyone who knows about electronic gadgets, we know that everything is based on the memory chip and memory size and how humongous the memory size is in these chips now. Mm-hmm. So, at those days, the memory was in that mobile phone. But it's not that all science fiction that memory would be placed under your skin. Mm-hmm. And that kind of a chip would be controlled, read and deleted remotely. So this is just where this technology has been aiming at all the time. So that you actually don't need the gadget. You just raise your hand and you start to talk and you have these things there. So, and if you study what the Chinese are planning to do with Huawei solutions, mm-hmm. and this artificial intelligence, I'm not at all surprised, and I don't think that it is science fiction and unreal target what we are reading now, what relates to this conspiracy theories relating to this issue that we are facing here.
Let me translate that, Anu. Also sie sagt, seit den 90ern ist es möglich, seit Anfang der 90er, seit man sich auf diese GSM-Specification geeinigt hat, ist es möglich für die Geheimdienste, also ich vermute, dass es nicht nur die USA sind, sondern wenigstens diese Five Eyes sind, also die Englisch sprechenden England, USA, Kanada, Neuseeland, Australien, dass es diese Länder sind, die seitdem, auf jeden Fall aber die NSA, die seitdem jedes Telefongespräch nicht nur mithören kann, sondern sie sagte gerade aufgenommen hat. Das ist also alles irgendwo gespeichert. Und sie sagt, natürlich ist es für uns immer wieder ein toller Fortschritt gewesen, wenn das Smartphone noch mehr konnte und noch mehr konnte. Aber man darf nicht vergessen, dass dahinter eigentlich eine militärische Technologie steckt. Diese Encryption Algorithms sind eigentlich militärische Technologien. Viviane hatte ja gefragt, was war die Erklärung dafür? Sie sagt, das weiß sie gar nicht so richtig, ob es dafür eine Erklärung gab, diese Technologie überhaupt einzuführen. Eine wäre ja möglicherweise die, man muss Verbrechen verhindern oder sowas. Aber sie sagt, das hat sie nie mitgekriegt, worum es wirklich ging. Aber Fakt ist, soweit sind wir jetzt. Und Fakt ist außerdem, dass sie sagt, da werde ich sie gleich noch weiter fragen, dass sie sagt, eigentlich geht es um den Chip, eigentlich geht es um die Memory, die Speicherkapazität dieses Telefons. Und eigentlich braucht man das Telefon gar nicht mehr, sondern die Ideen scheinen zu sein und China scheint auf dem Weg zu sein, diese Technologien als Chip in Menschen zu implantieren. Did I understand that correctly, Anu, that this is not science fiction anymore, but it is possible to implant such chips as we have them now in the gadgets, in the phones, etc., that it is possible to implant that into our bodies and then make phone calls without any, and other things, without any gadgets anymore?
Well, my understanding is that these are the so-called non-official products that certain military groups have already. But if we think about the chipping normal human beings nowadays, which I think we are sort of, that's a question mark behind all this hassle now relating to the vaccination. I'm not 100% certain what I think, but I'm inclining to think that this whole chaos has several functions. And one of the functions is definitely to try to get the people chipped with the memory chips with which these chips will actually be like their personal database with all kinds of information of themselves. And also there is a program which is where we find Bill Gates, of course, which I think it was, is it MasterCard or I'm not 100% certain whether it was MasterCard, but actually sort of including the financial things, your bank account information into this kind of chip which is placed under your skin. So this is reality. That kind of development project is ongoing. So I my thinking is that because they know that normal sensible people would not necessarily take these, they have decided to do it this way. And then, yes, because if this great reset plan is as it now looks, as it seems to be the target, and they want to do things quickly, as quickly as possible, then they create this kind of chaos. And this chaos is with which they are utilizing for many different purposes, and all of us can see very, very dark visions if we really start to dig into this. But my message to you is that I see that this is really logical. This is and actually this has a lot to do with China. because Huawei is the company which is the has been able to develop all these as far as anyone today. Because we have to remember that the Chinese, when they adopted this idea that you can go over there, China, and establish your factory, etc., etc., and everyone was sort of running there, all different business areas, there were everyone was forced to give all the tiny details. So they collected all the updated, most developed info and put it together and continued, and now they have their own already 6G development ongoing.
Mm-hmm. Let me translate that too. Also, sie sagt, sie glaubt schon, dass dass dieses gegenwärtige Chaos, was hier gezielt verursacht wird, daran kann ja überhaupt kein Zweifel mehr bestehen, dass dieses gegenwärtige Chaos und die Verunsicherung der Bevölkerung, das in Panik setzen der Bevölkerung verschiedenen Zielen dient. Eins davon ist allerdings, die Kontrolle über den Menschen zu bekommen, indem das, was jetzt in den Mobilphones sind oder noch viel mehr, solche Chips jedenfalls implantiert werden, unter die Haut implantiert werden, sodass wir sozusagen jederzeit durchsichtig werden mit allen uns betreffenden biologischen und anderen Daten. Sie glaubt, dass es in Teilen, in militärischen Teilen schon so weit ist, dass diese Technologie benutzt wird. Und sie glaubt, dass es auch sehr viel mit China zu tun hat. Der große Huawei-Konzern, dagegen hat sich ja auch Trump gewendet, hat da irgendjemanden eine leitende, die Tochter des Firmenchefs, glaube ich, hat er in Kanada festnehmen lassen. Sie glaubt, dass dass die Chinesen jedenfalls die letzten Jahre genutzt haben, als der große Boom da war, der inzwischen zusammengebrochen ist, als jeder nach China gehen wollte, da produzieren wollte. Unsere großen Konzerne sind ja auch alle da, dass die Chinesen, ich weiß es von meinem Cousin, der arbeitet für Airbus, dass die Chinesen das nur unter der Bedingung zugelassen haben, dass die Technologie vermittelt wird, dass also die Technologien, unsere Technologien, die unserer Konzerne, die der amerikanischen Konzerne, der französischen, italienischen, denen übergeben werden, damit sie selber ihre eigenen Spiele machen können. The question is, how far have the Chinese come with this, and how is, do you have any idea how they cooperate? How do people like Bill Gates and the Chinese cooperate? Do they cooperate or do they not? Is it so that we have a bunch of different people trying to take advantage of this panic situation right now, or is there a coordinated effort that can be seen?
Well, my personal opinion is that there is a coordinated effort. Mm-hmm. And this is in a way coordinated plan to create chaos on different areas in societies. Because I would be surprised if Bill Gates would not have made a deal with China. Mm-hmm. I would be very surprised, because why would he not do this? Because everyone has thought that China will actually take the globe over. Mm-hmm. And that would in a way explain a lot of what has happened and how these things are happening, and you know, for instance, now they have had these people looking after what has happened in Wuhan, and I read that there are people members of this group going from the States to Wuhan. And some of them have received humongous amounts of money during the course of their careers from China. Mm-hmm. So they are not objective, clearly. So this is really incredible situation in my opinion. And to me, it is. I have a couple of questions to you because I wish to know how you see the situation at the moment. What can we do?
Let me just ask I have a few more technical organizational questions. I was wondering, so you would think that if this is the plan, let's just assume it is, would you then think that these vaccines that they're now using, that this is already implanting something, or is it just getting people basically on the vaccine addiction trip or whatever, that they can always bring out a new vaccine because people already are basically conditioned to take the next shot, and then there would be something implanted? Or is it now really this very moment that they're trying to do this? What do you think, just from your feeling? Or
I wouldn't be surprised if at least some of these vaccines would have this sort of nanoparticles in them already.
So then it's basically a mini chip, yeah, but it is a technological, it's not just an element or some crystal kind of stuff. I have a hard time imagining this, but it's really like a super miniature chip basically
because they are incredibly small nowadays. And if we think that the memory is used for installing a one person kind of a history and database, social security numbers and vaccination records and these sort of things, I think they have to, if they want to implement this, they have to start it gradually, you know. And if we have this kind of a pandemic after pandemic after pandemic, and then you just have to take more vaccination after vaccination after vaccination. This is a kind of a method with which they can gradually start to do this. Yeah. But I guess the challenge is that we don't know what these vaccines include.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we're trying to find out. The big thing is that we don't really know anything for sure. There's a lot of concrete evidence that shows us, at least in my mind, that's the case, that shows us that this has never been about health. That was, I think, very clear right from the start. That's, by the way, why we formed this Corona Investigative Committee, because we all had serious doubts. Now, over the course of our work here, we've come to the very, very definite conclusion that this has never been about health, but it's always been about making people panic and taking them one step after another to mass vaccinations. And now it turns out it's not going to be one mass vaccination, but they want to condition us so that we will agree to very regular vaccinations, maybe a half a year or maybe even once a month or so. But it does make perfect sense to me that the ultimate goal is to use these vaccinations, among other purposes, but to also use them in order to implant these nanobots. We've been talking about this on the Kennedy group of lawyers, which comes together once a week, twice a week sometimes, in order to discuss these things. And there's there's an Israeli scientist who actually believes that that is what's happening right now, or if it's not happening right now, it'll happen soon. That this implanting of chips, of nanobots, is already taking place or will take place soon. Let me answer your question. I think what we're dealing with is a world in which one very small group of people, maybe 2,000, maybe 3,000 people, a very rich and powerful people, is trying to turn mankind into a technocracy, That seems very certain from what we're seeing as far as the vaccines are concerned. But that there is a much larger group of people. Some of them know it, some of them don't yet. A much larger group of people which wants to remain human. And those of us who know what the fight is about, they're getting up and doing things about it. Well, I think this happens, we have to think in a trifold manner. We have to make these things transparent. We have to educate the general public about this. This is what we're trying to do here in this Corona Investigative Committee. We also have to use the legal means that we have, but on an international level, so that they can't shut down one system and thereby destroy our legal efforts. I think that is extremely important, to coordinate our international legal efforts. And we're going to do that. Next week is going to be the next step. And on a third level, we have to be active politically. We have to show in public, we have to show that this is a large group of people that will not be dominated and that will not be subdued, that will fight for what is really at the heart of the matter. And the heart of the matter is that this is about humanity, this is about empathy, it's about things that have nothing to do with technocracy. And I do think, even after talking to Judge Angelo Giordani from Italy, I do think that we have a good chance, because we don't have a choice. We must win, and that's why we will win. Therefore, we're going to just keep on fighting, and we're going to keep on doing the best we can. And I do think that we have a lot of support among the population. I realize this when I talk to the cab driver, to the concierge at the hotel, to other people. That's when I realize that what we're seeing is a lot of propaganda, a lot of lies in the mainstream media. But
Rainer, people love you guys. You are so loved and admired.
Oops.
Tired people. Can you hear me?
No, yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have one question which I've been thinking about the. Because people in Finland are very kind of quiet, and they trust every single authority, and this is the country has developed to be this kind of culture that people don't question openly, not at all. And if you start to question this sensibility of this whole thing and these sort of things, you really get sting mark on your forehead.
Yeah.
But anyway, more and more people are starting to have questions about this whole thing. Although Finland is very, whatever has been done up till now has been done in a very calm and in a way sensible way, but still is following the European Union, guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
But my question relates to the European Medicine Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been going through the pages, of course, together with the Finnish equivalent. And what I see that their stuff concentrates in vaccines,
mm-hmm.
but they are very quiet when it comes to the PCR test.
Yeah,
do you know? Yes,
yeah,
go ahead.
It's a very, very, very good point. I don't think any of us knew what to do about the PCR test except attack their validity in court. We do know what to do about the vaccinations, and that's why our colleague Renate Holzeisen, who was with us just before you came on, and helped us out translating what Judge Dr. Angelo Giorgiani said. She's the one who is, she's the lead attorney in our effort to sue the European Union and to make them nullify their admission of the vaccines. But you're absolutely right. We should have done something, but we didn't know what to do about the PCR test because it took a long time. Even for me to explain to my international colleagues that this PCR test is at the heart of the matter, that if we destroy the credibility of the PCR test as a means to find out about infections, and if we destroy the second lie that Drosten came up with, and then the WHO pushed all over the world, that the notion that people who have no symptoms can be infectious. If we destroy that in a court of law, then the whole house of cards is going to come down. I wish we were a little faster, but I know, of course, that in some of the courts of law, we have judges who are in line with the government and who will not doubt anything that the government says, and they will step on the brakes as soon as one of these cases is filed. However, we're going to file many more cases, and we have now more lawyers than we did in the beginning that are capable of filing such cases, not just here in Germany, but also in the United States and Canada and other countries, including Australia. But you're right, the PCR test should have been attacked right from the start. But it took me a while, it took us a while to...
So, Rainer, dear, what I think is that the European Medicine Agency has to have had the approval process for the PCR tests as the same way as for the vaccines, right? So when they have approved the PCR test to be used as the test for this sort of coronavirus, they must have the scientific approval, scientific documents in which this is in a way confirmed.
That's the question. I mean, it can be that they're simply operating as a... intermediate position or whatever, you know, that they just have the right to use it for now as this like diagnosticum, but it's that it has not undergone such a full blown admission process.
What I think is that because this is kind of a basis for all this hassle. Yeah. I mean, without this test, which has been used the way it has been used and is used at the moment the way it is used, they would not have any kind of possibility of claiming that there is a real pandemic or anything.
Yeah, we know that.
So I think if, because I'm not a specialist to do this, but I have a group of neurologists and vaccine people, doctors who know quite a lot of vaccines, but this this test, I think that this is so cleverly built story that you have this PCR test, just as you were saying, Rainer, that you guys have been looking into the PCR test because that is actually the key. That is the whole thing. If we can shoot that down completely, then everything else goes down.
Yeah, then the emperor will suddenly be seen without clothes. Yes, absolutely.
And the quickest way to do this is to make a very strict inquiry to the European Medicine Agency.
We're going to do that, Anu. It is very possible, however, that no one was involved except Drosten and the WHO. But we'll find out.
They have to open the books because this is something. And then, you know, I have been thinking about this. if they send a kind of a feedback which is like nothing. Mm-hmm. I think we are dealing with that kind of question that then we have to consider whether we take that reply to the European Court of Human Rights, because they are utilizing these tests as the basis on which they build all kind of restrictions not to mention the vaccination.
Yes. That's a good idea. You know what? We're going to have to talk about this in detail with some of the colleagues that are around you.
Yeah, please do that.
We'll come up with another meeting sometime next week.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it right now, but we will come together, and it'll happen next week. Anu, I have just one more appointment for today. That's why I have to go.
Yes, we will stop here now, and you guys, you have had a very long day, and I do thank warmly that you were able to listen to me, and I had because this was my point to go after the European Medicine Agency, because that is they have to reply very quickly because of this issue.
Yeah, we will do that, and we will first before we do that, we're going to have some more detailed discussions about this.
Yeah. Well, okay. Have a wonderful weekend, and thank you for letting me to become part of this important thing.
well, thank you for joining us. This is
Okay. You take care.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Bye.
Ja, und ich glaube, das war so viel für heute, dass es uns fast aus den Schuhen gehauen hätte. Aber es geht ja nichts über Informationen. Nur mit Informationen kann man sich eine echte Meinung bilden. Und bevor ich das allerdings jetzt schaffe, wird ja auch nicht anders gehen, muss ich erstmal ein bisschen Ruhe haben. Deswegen glaube ich, an dieser Stelle könnten wir jetzt wirklich einen Punkt machen und sagen,
die andere Sache
war anders. Die GEZ-Sache haben wir angesprochen, also wir werden, das wollen wir vielleicht am Ende nochmal kurz sagen, wir werden dazu noch eine eigene Session haben, nicht 5 Stunden lang, aber so lange auch mit den richtigen rechtlichen Beratern, dass es jedenfalls von jedem verstanden wird. GEZ-mäßig haben wir folgende Nummer vor. Es gibt eine Menge Leute, die völlig unabhängig von Corona schon seit Jahren unzufrieden sind mit der Bezahlung dieser GEZ-Gebühren oder Beiträge, weil die Gegenleistung dafür nicht stimmt. Also die Gegenleistung hat im letzten Jahr, haben wir ausgerechnet, nun weiß Gott, nicht gestimmt. Da kam nur noch Propaganda. Also anstatt Information und Bildungsauftrag erfüllen, so kam nur noch Propaganda. Ein Haufen Leute haben uns dummes Zeug erzählt. Deswegen glauben wir erstens, man sollte, es kommt noch im Detail, man sollte aufhören, diese Gebühren überhaupt zu bezahlen, stattdessen in einen Treuhandfonds einzahlen und damit dann einen echten, neuen, informativen und dem Bildungsauftrag tatsächlich gewidmeten Rundfunk aufbauen mit Playern, die jetzt schon alle da sind in den alternativen Medien. Ken Jebsen ist einer davon, Frau Preradovic ist einer davon, viele, viele andere, die allesamt in Betracht kommen dafür. Und dieses Geld sollte man dann nehmen, um daraus ein ganz neues Netzwerk zu gründen. Viviane hat da schon was vorbereitet, wir werden das nächstes Mal noch besprechen. Für die Vergangenheit würden wir sagen, kann man einfach mit einem Mahnbescheid, auch das besprechen wir nochmal, für die vergangenen 12 Monate oder sowas sind es ja jetzt schon fast gewesen, kann man einfach mit einem Mahnbescheid diese 17,50 Euro pro Monat zurückfordern. Das ist billig, das ist schnell und es wird sicherlich so sein, wenn das viele, viele, viele Menschen machen, dass irgendwelche dieser Mahnbescheide rechtskräftig werden, weil die gar nicht alles schaffen werden zu bearbeiten. Aber die Details bringen wir später. Das waren im Wesentlichen, war das ein Brainstorming, was wir zunächst gemacht haben. Aber wir haben gesehen, dass es außerhalb der Menschen, die sich wegen der Corona-Maßnahmen Gedanken machen, schon lange Skeptiker in Anführungsstrichen gibt, GEZ-Leugner gibt, die wir gerne zu unseren Freunden machen würden auf diesem Wege. Also, Näheres kommt dazu, aber jetzt erstmal wünschen wir allen ein schönes Wochenende.
Noch einen kleinen Punkt. Wir haben eine E-Mail-Adresse eingerichtet, gez@corona-ausschuss.de, und da kann man zum Beispiel schon mal uns ein paar Vorschläge liefern, wer denn vielleicht ein unterstützenswertes Medium wäre. Und genau, das wird auch sehr interessante Aspekte dann hervorbringen. Also da ist was Schönes in Vorbereitung. Die Details, wie Rainer schon sagt, werden wir demnächst nochmal veröffentlichen, sodass man sich das dann alles im Detail angucken kann. Wir haben noch eine sehr wichtige Sache. Wir haben haben ja einen Whistleblower quasi aus einem Berliner Altenheim, wo eben sehr wichtige Informationen, also über die Situation nach den Impfungen, jetzt auch tatsächlich in einem Gespräch zwischen Rainer und mir und der den betreffenden Informationsgebern sozusagen zustande gekommen ist. Das werden wir jetzt hochladen, sodass man sich das anschauen kann. Und es wird auch Gruß in die Küche, werden wir so überall vernetzen, dass das auch nicht runtergenommen werden kann, weil das wirklich eine sehr wichtige Angelegenheit ist.
Das wird international gesendet werden und da wird es auch noch mehr zu geben als das, was jetzt gerade rauskommt.
Genau. Ja, dann nach diesem wirklich sehr intensiven Tag jetzt wünschen wir einen schönen Abend und ein schönes Wochenende und dann hören wir uns bald wieder.
Bis dann.
Tschüss.